Hello and welcome back to the My First Marathon podcast, where we interview runners in all stages of their running careers about their first marathon experiences to prove that anyone can run a marathon. My name is Taylor, and on today's episode, we've got a lifelong runner with 66 marathons and a wealth of knowledge under her. We're talking someone who's ran New York 27 times, Chicago 7 times, and Boston 6 times. We break down her journey to her first marathon in San Francisco, where she was finding out what it meant to be a marathoner and got through a lot of the triumphs and low points of running multiple marathons in a year. I love this runner's perspective on making sure you adjust your goals and, at the end of the day, make running fun. Without further ado, let's jump right in. Please welcome Erica. Erica, thank you so much for coming on the podcast this weekend. I'm really excited to break down your story. We've got 66 marathons that we're somehow going to get from point A to point B on today. So I'm excited to break it all down. Thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, I'm really excited to chat with you.
Awesome. All right, cool. Well, let's start from the beginning. How did this whole running journey start for you?
So I started running in high school and I was pretty into it. I did cross country and track. But I got super burned out. We had a very competitive team. And, you know, as one does, it just became a lot and it was really stressful. And so when I went to college, I did not run a step. I went to the gym. I did the Stairmaster. That was really big at that time.
Yeah.
And like, I never ran. And it was funny because I lived like, by my senior year in college, I lived like 3 blocks from our big cross country course. That from my high school. And
sure.
And I never ran there. I did rollerblading, everything but running. And then when I finished college, I was like, oh man, like you better do something. You got to get back in shape. And I had joined a gym and there were a lot of runners there. And, you know, I was running on the treadmill, it was winter or whatever. And they were like, oh, you're a pretty good runner. Like, do you ever run outside? I was like, oh yeah, not anymore. And they convinced me to sign up for 10K or 15K with them.
Yeah.
And I did it. And then it was just like, I just got into the racing. And during that time, I guess when I was in grad school, I did some 10Ks and someone convinced me to do a 15K. And I was like, I don't know. But a coach had told me, well, if you can do 2/3 the distance, you could do it, right? So I went from 10K to 15K. And then the same friend who got me to do the 15K convinced me to do a half marathon. And like, that's another funny story, which is like, I had no idea what I was doing. I lined up. This was in the 90s, so there was no internet.
Yeah.
You signed up on a piece of paper with a check. You mailed the check if it was far away. So I went down, I was at the Jersey Shore. I lived in New Jersey at the time, and super flat. It was like on the boardwalk near Belmar, New Jersey. And, you know, I lined up, and people said, well, you know, what's your pace? I said, I don't know. I just like to run under 2 hours.
Yeah.
And I ran a 1:37.
Wow.
Like 30.
That's great.
Which is like 7:20 pace or something. And yeah. I had no idea what I was doing. Literally, I was just like following the people in front of me. And I was, you know, I had big cotton shirt and big cotton shorts. I had no idea what I was doing. And it took me a long time to break that time.
Yeah.
Because I think like ignorance is bliss, right? Which is
I agree.
True,
yes.
True for some other things too. So that was like my, and then of course I couldn't walk for like a week because I was so sore.
That was everything you had. Yeah.
That was it.
Yeah.
And I remember saying to somebody right after the race, because I went by myself and I had to drive myself home in my stick shift car, which was also kind of funny. And I remember saying to somebody, there's no way I could ever do that twice. Like that was just unbelievable. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so went on my business. And then when I started my first job, I had a mentor who happened to be a runner. And he was like, oh, come run this with me, come run that with me. And so it was really cool because we had that professional connection, but also this personal connection. And he was a lot of fun. And he dared me to go and run the San Francisco Marathon with him. So keep in mind, I lived in New Jersey. I had never been to San Francisco before. And I, you know, seen the commercials. Like I knew, you know, the Cerrone. Like I knew it was hilly, but I had no idea. And so I was like, yeah, you could probably do that. You know, like, don't dare me to do anything. I probably will try it.
Right.
So I did it. And you had asked, like, do I remember? Because it was 1996 San Francisco Marathon, which is in the summer, which is also interesting because you're familiar with San Francisco. It's actually cold in the summer.
Yes.
So not only did I not train correctly, I also didn't pack correctly the trip either, which is like I had to go buy clothes when I was there.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, in terms of like getting ready for it, I lived in New Jersey at the time in a pretty hilly area. which was good for training for San Francisco. But you know, it wasn't like it is today where there's so much information about everything. It was definitely like, yeah, you know, I did some long runs and I ran some during the week, but I was pretty busy. So I didn't always have time to train. I think my longest run was 16 miles.
Okay. Yeah.
Which I would not recommend, obviously. Yeah. And I remember getting to mile 16 in the San Francisco Marathon and just thinking, oh my God, how am I going to run 10 more miles?
Yeah. It's a big jump for sure.
Yeah. And I was like, okay, this is not good.
Yeah.
You know, and I, of course, when I ran the 16 miles, I actually wasn't even intending to run 16 miles, but I got like lost in this area by my house and had no water with me. I had no food with me. Like it was, really, I'm dating myself, but I think it's really before there were a lot of gels. Like, I don't even remember what the fuel
the options
was.
Were. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, well, they have power bars, like the old fashioned, you probably have never even had one of these, like the original power bars. They were in like a gold package.
Yeah.
And they were kind of like RX bar texture, but.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I do know that. Yeah.
Good. But like, there was like, you know, Gatorade power bars.
Classic.
I think there was some kind of goo type of thing, but I don't even remember. But also, it's like, it wasn't like now where you could just like ask everybody. It was just kind of like, you know, I was sort of relying on what my friend was telling me to do. And in the race, I remember that there was a drink called Accelerate.
Mm.
And so as you were getting to every water stop, they were like, water, Accelerate, water, Accelerate. I'm like, why are they telling me to go fast? I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing.
Like,
here.
These are our options.
it was kind of like, it's funny now looking back on it. You're like, yeah. Oh yeah, they were just like offering me something. And I was like, I've only ever heard of Gatorade. I don't know what I'm supposed to do here. And I didn't normally take that stuff because it like wasn't great on my stomach. But at that point in my first marathon, which I think a lot of people have that, like, I would have taken anything.
Sure.
Like, okay.
You're like, these people have to know more than me. Yeah.
Candy from strangers. Okay. I'll take it. Yeah. So, you know, my preparation wasn't the greatest. And as I mentioned, I was like really busy at work and didn't always have time to train during the week. I did the best I could, you know, it's just kind of haphazard, I would say.
Yeah.
And I ran a couple of half marathons and, in New York in Central Park, they used to have an 18 mile, but they still do, I think. It was actually 30 kilometer training run for the New York Marathon. But actually now that I'm thinking about it, I did that for my first New York Marathon, but for my first marathon, it wasn't even the right season. So I didn't even do that. That's how I got to 16, not 18.
Yeah.
So, and clothes, same thing. I wore a cotton tank top. And a cotton sports bra and like basketball shorts that were my ex-boyfriend's sister's college, like some random.
Yeah.
Like I was pretty lucky. I don't remember getting terribly chafed or anything because it wasn't
That's
too
lucky.
Hot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. But it was just like one of those things. And I look back at the pictures and they're so hilarious because you're like, you literally had no idea what to do.
Yeah, looking back, just knowing everything that you know now after all these years, you're like, what was happening? You were probably a stronger runner back then, just like having all the things that you were going through.
Well, I was also like, I mean, I was in my early 20s, and
yes.
There's something to be said for that. But the other thing, as I mentioned, so I had done the 137 half a couple of years before this.
Yes.
And so I ran the first, I have to admit, still 66 marathons later, I've never run negative splits.
Mm-hmm.
I've run even splits a few times, but not that many. So I'm always a bit of a crash and burn runner.
Sure.
I can give great advice. And I always tell people, don't make, you know, the only thing you can do in Chicago to mess it up is to start too fast, which I know is completely 100% true. Can't say that I have ever not started too fast, except for when I'm running with other people and they're like, hey, stop, you're going too fast. So in San Francisco, I ran 145 first half.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it was slower than my sub 140 that I had done only once up until then. I think it took me a couple of years to get back under 140. But, you know, my head, I'm like, oh, you're going slow, you know, and the excitement of it and over the Golden Gate Bridge and everything, you know. So it's like, anyway, it was just one of those things where I was like, made every mistake you could make, which including starting out too fast. So I ran 145 the first half. So it's 8 minute mile, like literally exactly 8 minute miles. And then I ran 2:10 for the second half, which is 10 miles. So I ended in 9 minute miles, which is great. Yeah. I did a 3:55, which
is great.
You know, sub 4 hours for a first marathon. I was proud of it. But it was total crash and burn. So in addition to being like dressed crazy, no fuel, crash and burn. And I think what happens for a lot of people is you do that first marathon and it's either like one and done, check it off the bucket list. I did it. Now I got it. Or you're like you're a lifer and like, I made some mistakes here. I think I could do better.
Yeah.
So
that was you. You had that chip on your shoulder where you were like, all right, that was that. And now let's figure out how we can put these pieces together. What were some of the things, if you remember, what were some of those things that you were thinking after that race? You were like, all right, I'm going to start working on this, this, and this to improve for the next one. If you were even thinking about that right away.
Well, I at first I was just like, oh my God, that was impossible.
Sure.
Like, oh my God, how did I do that? So, you know, in a way I was a little disappointed that I obviously made so many mistakes, especially in the pacing, but I was, once I kind of got, you know, could walk again in a straight line, you know, and do the stairs, I was like, well, you know, I could train better. You know, I could read a book about this, because I didn't even do it. Like, I mean, just being totally honest, I didn't do anything.
Yeah.
I asked my friend, he gave me some advice. That was it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was like, okay, I'm going to read the book. And at that time, it was Hal Higdon. That was the book.
Yeah.
But also, I joined a training program for the New York Marathon for that same year. So I ran 1996. I ran San Francisco was in July, and I ran New York was my first New York in 1996, which was in November. And so I followed a training program. Like, I did that. So that was really helpful. And I started running in New York. You could run like in Central Park. They had groups where you could just join. And so that was what I did basically, was I joined other people and, you know, was smarter with pacing and everything like that. So I did New York that year. You know, obviously I had gone the distance one time before, which is in and of itself will help you improve, right? Because
huge confidence boost.
You know, from doing it the first time you do it, like, you know, I've run first marathons with friends and they're like at mile 20, they're like, this is no big deal, by the way. I'm like, okay. Because you still have, you know, 10K to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then like at mile 22, when their head starts spinning around, you're like, okay, I told you so.
Yeah, right.
But you know, some people don't hit the wall. Some people don't struggle. But most people in their first marathon do have that experience of like, now I've gone farther than I've ever gone before. Like,
yes.
Oh my gosh, you know, what am I going to do? So, you know, in New York, the first year I did it, I took 10 minutes off my time. I think, from starting off a little slower.
Yeah.
And just having my body having the knowledge of like, what's this going to be like? Like, what's it going to be like when you get to mile 22?
Mm-hmm.
What's, you know, so I think just doing it once, and then, you know, of course, muscle memory. And then, you know, as you learn more, but certainly, I mean, just training, like respecting the distance and doing the long runs. I've done years where, you know, I've been injured or struggling with, or just don't have time.
Yeah.
But I always do the long runs.
Mm, yeah.
Like the rest of it, I think, yeah, you know, you'll run a better time if you do speed work. You'll run a better time if you do tempo runs. But if you don't do the long runs, like, even if you have tons of experience like I do, you still have to like respect the distance and do the long runs. So
sure.
I always try to make sure to do that. You know, I think the interesting thing, the conventional wisdom has changed a lot about, you know, how people train. I feel like I always did 2 20-mile runs. I never did more than 20 miles, and I still don't. I train with people who do 22, 24. They do whatever they do. And for me, like, I know that does not work for me. Like, I'm just leaving some of what I have on race day back in training if I overtrain. You know, I am a little bit unconventional. People are like, oh, you should be a running coach, you know, all this stuff. I'm like, no, because the way I do it for myself
works for you.
Necessarily what works for me works for me. And I guess that's, you know, that's the same thing about like all these, you know, influencers, Instagram influencers who's trying to say like, you know, I went from this to this, you can too. And it's like, that works for you.
Right.
You know, and it, hey, it might work for Taylor, but it might not, you know, and so I know what works for me. And sometimes when I tell people like, oh yeah, I'm not going to do the, you know, my group's doing 22 miles, but I'm only doing 20. And they're like, are you sure? I'm like, uh-huh. 100%. I'm good.
Yeah, you've got plenty of experience to iron all of this out. Do you remember, was there a point like when you felt like you had all the pieces? I'm sure that you're still constantly learning, like every marathon has its own lesson. But do you remember if there was a point where you were like, okay, I generally know what I need to do for me to train for, like to put my best foot forward for a marathon?
Yeah, I mean, I think it took me like, it took me 4 marathons to qualify for Boston.
Okay, yeah.
And I came close. Like I think I did 355, 345, 341 something. And at the time, and I feel so bad saying this because people are like, oh, really? At the time it was 340.59. You still got the 59 seconds too.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course there was no such thing as you get under it, but you don't get in, right? But like it didn't even sell out until March when I like,
that's crazy. Yeah. Just compared to how it is now. Yeah.
Yeah. It was so crazy. So like, you know, I was really focused on that. And my third marathon, I ran 3:41:12. So I was like this close.
Sure.
And then of course you're analyzing like, what's it going to take? What's it going to take? But then I made a big jump in my fourth marathon. I actually ran a 3:31.
Wow,
so I went from
jump.
3:41 to 3:31. And I think that was around, you know, it was like 2 years into my marathoning journey when I think I really figured it out for myself. Like you have to do 2:20s. You have to do, you know, some tempo runs during, you know, and for me, like the way I have always done it is I do races. I'm a really bad in terms of discipline. I'm really bad about like, if a coach tells me, okay, you have to run your marathon pace, go out and run 10 miles at marathon pace.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay. And I go run 10 miles, whatever pace it is.
Sure.
But if you tell me to run 10 miles at marathon pace, but it's a half marathon, and like, you know, okay, take the first mile and a half as a warm up, then run 10 miles at marathon pace and then run, you know, cool down.
Yeah.
I could do that. No problem. Right. Like I've always been a racer more than a trainer, you know,
yeah.
I think there's that difference. So I think by the time I got to that fourth one, like I realized, okay, yeah, do a couple 5Ks, do a couple 10Ks, do a 10 mile race, do some half marathons. And that's what works for me. And then, you know, in the long runs.
Yeah.
And I think then it was dialed in. And then from that time, I think that was in 1998 when I first qualified for Boston. I, for the next like 10 years until, you know, 8 years or whatever, until I moved to Chicago, I just consistently ran my marathons in, you know, consistent times and, you know, kept getting better and better and better. And I think I ran my PR in the marathon in 2005.
Wow. Okay, cool.
And it was on the same course, actually, that I ran my first Boston qualifier.
Oh, okay. So what course was that?
It was Steamtown in Scranton, Pennsylvania.
Okay, cool. Did you strategically, I know some people with big Boston goals will strategically pick their course. Did you pick that one on purpose?
What happened was in the New York Marathon, in the 90s, you had to line up. If you lived in New York, you had to line up at the post office.
Okay.
At midnight. Because entry was based on postmark.
Oh, really? Okay.
It sounds so crazy.
Yeah.
In 1998, I was actually out of town. And one of my friends took my envelope and my application, which was in paper with a check, and went at midnight and stood on the line for me, which she said was super fun because she's like, I am never going to do this, but this is like my way of participating.
Got to experience it.
Yeah. Because it's like a party, yeah. You know, everyone's standing around. Like it was like getting concert tickets or like Air Jordans or something.
That's cool.
You know? And I was like, she said it was really cool. She said it was really fun. So in 1997, I was also out of town and I didn't do that. I just mailed it and I didn't get in. So then I was trying to figure out, okay, what marathon is within driving distance and has like a good course. And Steamtown has, it's a neck downhill. It's not like one of these crazy Revel ones.
Yeah.
Which is another topic for discussion.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it does like the first 2 miles in Steamtown is literally down a mountain.
Mm.
Like I think the year I did my PR, I was under 7 minutes for the first 2 miles.
Oh, wow.
And
yeah.
And I wasn't worried about it. And I got to the halfway mark at 1:35 and I wasn't worried about it. Like that's how downhill it is the first half, but the second half is just regular. It's like flat or, and there's two huge uphills at the end. One is at mile 24 and one is at mile 20. Like you crest the hill at mile 26 and you're like cursing the person.
Yeah, that is, that's just, that's where you're looking at the race organizers like, come on, like we could have done better than this.
Exactly. And the, yeah. the time I broke the 320, I had done the, you know, do you ever do marathon math? When you get it totally wrong.
Oh, yeah,
wrong
runner's
in your
math
head.
All the time. Totally.
Runner's math. And you're like, oh, and the previous, I had done the Vermont City Marathon, which is another one that I've done twice. And I ran a 321 and changed. And when I was doing Steamtown, when I got to mile 25, I did the math again. And I was like, I can't believe this. I'm going to get another one, a 321. And again, if I ran a 321 today, I would literally do cartwheel across the finish line.
Sure.
But at the time, you know, you're like, I can't believe this. I can't believe this is happening again. And I got to the top of the hill and I looked down and I could see the minute. I could see the clock.
Yeah.
Because you basically ran downhill. And I saw it and I was like, it was, you know, 3:15 or something. And I was like, oh my God. And okay. And then I was going down and there's a steep downhill at the end. And I was like, yeah. just don't fall.
Yeah, right.
Do, don't fall. And I had looked at the guy at the, there was a man standing there. And I was like, he saw my face and he's like, you're going to break 320. And I was like, I was so overcome because I, you know, in my head, I had missed it again. And I was like, luckily I didn't just give up and throw in the towel because
right.
I missed it. So that was exciting. It was basically like, I picked the course because I knew it was like the three, when I ran it for the Boston, I picked mm-hmm. it because it was the best course and the best timing, like for my training.
Yeah.
Because I was training with people who were doing New York and I think it was like 2 weeks before or 1 week before. So it was very close to that.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So when I'm just out of curiosity, I know it's kind of a sidebar, but just out of curiosity, like when you're thinking about, when you're incorporating all these races on your way to the race that you're training for, do you keep, are you training for the end marathon or do you set little goals for the races along the way? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I pretty much was always training for the marathon.
Okay.
I didn't have, you know, it's funny because like I had done some fast half marathons along the way too. That was, half marathons always been my best distance by far, like my half marathon time, you know how like your half marathon time translates, you know, people say it's like half marathon times 2 plus 10 to 15.
Yeah.
So I've always kind of gotten that, but my marathon, I think my half marathon, my best half marathon time was just over 1:30.
Yeah.
And I was consistently running 132, 133, 134, 135. And so that roughly does equate to the math I was doing, but I think I was just a much stronger, my performance and like my placement was always better.
Fun. Cool.
Yeah. So I trained for that. Like I tried to do the half marathons well and like to get PRs in them, but mostly it was like with the marathon in mind.
Cool. Yeah, and I know, just talking before we started recording, that New York has been a big piece of your running journey. How did New York even, I know you're from, did you say you were from New Jersey originally?
I'm from New Jersey, and then I lived in New York when I, I had moved, by the time I did my first New York, I had moved there. I was living in New Jersey, and then moved to New York. And it was just like, I feel like, this is similar in Chicago, like, people who live here train for and do the Chicago Marathon every year.
Yeah.
And like for New York, it's like pretty much we just did it every year. And like I said, you know, you first had the lineup and all that stuff, but then they introduced probably in the late 90s, early 2000s, like if you did 9 races in with the New York Roadrunners, you could get in automatically. And then they had the time qualifiers. Which I was able to qualify a lot, many years in the half marathon, but not in the full marathon, only a few times.
Yeah.
And then, so they had this 9 race thing. And so, you know, it was so easy to just, and the races were inexpensive. Like I think a difference between now, and I think the races now that they have that are part of this series are still pretty inexpensive compared to like, you know, if you're doing like a Disney or,
Even
the big half marathons in Chicago, like the big half marathons in New York are expensive, but the other races like the 10Ks and stuff, I think they're like $30, $40. And if you're a member of the Roadrunners Club, like back then they used to be like $15 or $20.
Yeah.
So it was really like, no big deal at all.
Yeah, why not?
Do them. And you're there anyway, and you're going to do your training. So
right.
My friends and I just like, we would just sign up for a whole bunch of things. So it was more just like a convenience and like a way to get in some speed training on the way to the marathon. So basically, I think I mentioned this to you before, but
yeah,
if you did 15 New York marathons by 2015, you're guaranteed entry for life. And I moved to Chicago in 2006 and I had 11. So then it just became a thing like, all right, well,
you have to
do it. Right.
Right.
And it was still like enough time, right. It was 2006. So I still had, you know, all of those years, like even if I didn't get a number and like, I had the half marathon time for most of the years. And then one year I didn't have it because I had been injured. So I went and ran nine races in New York, like living in Chicago. And like sometimes they had two races in a weekend. So I went with I went with a friend from here to do the Brooklyn half. And I was like, okay, you don't have to do this, but I have to do this. And she was like, wait, what? So we did the Brooklyn half. And then on Sunday, there was like a 4-mile race in Central Park. And she's like, well, I've never run in Central Park. So she came and did it too.
Yeah.
But I feel like now there's just a lot more people doing multiple races. Like, you know, that's kind of more a thing now. Like even with the marathons, they have the 5K the day before. But back then that was kind of weird.
Yeah.
Like, it was like, okay, this friend of mine is crazy. She's doing this crazy stuff. So that was pretty funny. But yeah, so 1 year I did that. But then I got the 15 in 2014. So it would have been 2013, except it was canceled for Hurricane Sandy. And then in 2 years I was injured. I did.
Okay.
I haven't run consecutive. I've run 24 New Yorks, and I missed 1997, 2007, and 2009 for injuries.
That's still so impressive that you've ran New York that many times. Is it
out of crazy?
It's so crazy. Yeah. Out of all of the times that you, or I guess out of all of your races, would you say that New York is your favorite course just overall in terms of like experience, running, like, yeah, everything?
Yeah. New York's definitely my favorite. And mostly because I used to live there. So I know it by heart.
Yeah.
But also, like, I have a lot of friends there still. Yeah. Just even the friends that aren't there anymore, I just still have the memories of like, of where they would be, or like, my father passed away, but where he used to be, like he's still there for me. Like,
that's so
spot.
Cool. Yeah.
So, I mean, that's a very sentimental sounding thing, but I feel it. Like, I feel the support. Like, my mom moved away from the East Coast a long time ago, but like, I still think of her and my old roommate and people who would be in certain spots. Like, they're still there for me there. And so it just brings me a lot of joy.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, that's got to be so nostalgic to like have that experience every single time that you run it. You're like, have these little things to look forward to. It's so cool.
Yeah.
Really cool. Cool. It's so cool. And then I know you mentioned that you had a couple of years where you went through a couple injuries. I know injuries for a runner is like worst case scenario, mentally, physically, it's really rough. What was that experience like for you, kind of navigating a couple of injuries?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I have been told by a lot of people, I always joke, if I had a dollar for every time people said you don't look like a marathon runner, I would be so rich. And it's weird because I don't know if you saw my Instagram, like I just look like a normal person.
What does a marathon runner look like? That's the question I always want to ask. Like, where's your perception?
Some of these people.
Yes.
And I don't ask that question anymore because people are like, oh, I don't know, I thought you'd be thin.
Not
the answer. That
don't take that energy somewhere else.
Yeah, exactly. And yes, I do still hold a grudge if you said that to me.
Yes, right.
A couple of the people,
right,
in particular. But I was like pretty lucky. Like, I actually had a doctor once tell me that I had like Ukrainian peasant bones. Like, I have very like strong legs and I have strong bones, and I've never had a stress fracture like in all of these miles that I've run. So when I moved to Chicago, I had a couple of small injuries in New York, like tendonitis and things like that, but nothing that ever stopped me from being able to race, like plantar fasciitis, like small.
Yeah.
For me, small, luckily.
Workable
and resolvable
injuries.
Resolvable injuries. But when I moved to Chicago, from all the flat, I think, just from like the relentless flat, like we train out here is one nothing. Mm. So I think likely from that, I got a high hamstring strain. And then, of course, it didn't slow me down at first. So, of course, I did nothing about it. And I just kept running on it.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, I'd be out like that year, it was like 2006 New York is the last race I ran under 320, or 330 rather. And I was struggling in the training to keep up with everybody, but the race day, I had a perfect race day. It was like, well, not super well executed because I was running with my friends. And of course, we were running too fast. And the one person was like, we're running too fast. And everyone's like, yeah.
Yeah.
She finished in exact splits because she's like a metronome. And the rest of us like tailed out. My time was good, but not the splits.
Sure.
She looked at it. But that was the last time I had a sub 330. And once I finished it, like in the winter training, I had done a training group for, I guess, so that was 2006. And then in 2007, I did Boston as a guide for a blind runner.
Cool.
But I joined a training group in Chicago, which was amazing because I made these lifelong friends in that group. And I was, you know, I had done Boston before, but there's a lot of people who do for their first Boston, they do this Sleep Beat program here in Chicago. And so I made, you know, met all these awesome people and did, you know, did fine in Boston, pacing my friend. And then I did four other marathons, but I was getting progressively more injured, but didn't stop. I did Boston, and then I did Flying Pig. And then a friend of mine was doing his first marathon in Alaska for team and training. So I went up and did that with him. And that was super fun. He was one of the people that I said, like, you know, first marathon at mile 20, he's like, this is really no big deal.
And
at mile 22, he's like, I have a camp. I don't know if I'll be able to finish. He was like, yeah. And then I trained for Chicago, and I had a number for New York for 2007 also. That was the hot year in Chicago. And then I wasn't even able to run New York, which obviously I had done a lot of marathons.
Sure.
I think that was, four was the most I had ever done until after the pandemic. I think I did five 1 year.
Wow. Yeah, that's a lot. That's just constantly like recycling your training cycle over and over and over again at that point.
Everyone's like, oh, so you just always.
You just run.
I was the friend who I basically could. I still think I can. Like, if someone said to me, like, hey, I got this extra number for this marathon, can you run it with me tomorrow? As long as they were wanting, it wasn't a time.
Sure, yeah.
You know, there was no time requirement. Like, I could run a marathon tomorrow if I had to. I mean, it might not be pretty, but I could do it.
We could do it, yeah.
Yeah.
How cool is that feeling, too? Because I remember that the first time that I realized, maybe more the half marathon distance for me. I'm a little less experienced than you. Yeah. But I remember the first time I was like, oh, yeah, I if somebody asked me this week if I wanted to run a race, I could do it. It was just, like, a cool feeling. Do you remember, like, did you have a similar feeling to that for marathoning?
I mean, I definitely remember that for half marathoning, for sure.
Yeah.
And for marathoning, like I had a friend here in Chicago. I think this was in 2012. It was the year that New York was canceled, but this was before, and she was she had run one marathon before, and then she was like wanting, maybe she had done two, and she wanted to break 4 hours, and I was like, okay, well, I'll come run 20 miles with you because I'm training for New York, so I'll just come run 20. And then I thought about it, and I'm like, you know what, I'll just sign up and run the race with you. She's like, what do you mean? And I'm like, well, I'll just come pace you. She's like, you'll come run a whole marathon with me? And like, and it was the same. Like, I had jumped in to help friends in Chicago. Like, I'd run half the race with them, or, you know, the middle miles, or whatever they wanted. And a couple of times people were like, I was getting my friend water, and people would be like, are you running a whole race with like a bag on your back? And I'm like, oh no, I'm just helping pace my friend for a little while. You know, I'm sorry if, you know, some people get upset if you're in the race.
Yeah.
But I was like, oh, you know, I'm really sorry. And they're like, I wish I had a friend who'd run a part of the marathon with me. Like, people were always like, you just jumped in and you're running 10 miles. Like, I don't have any friends who could do that. You know, and the same thing for when I told my friend that I'll just run the whole thing with you, you know, and she's like, okay, like, what? And I did. And we did it. We, you know, she did great. And the last couple miles, I could tell, like, she just wanted to be done with it, but she was picking up steam. And so then I was like, oh, we have to hurry. We have to hurry. And she wasn't looking at her watch. And at the end, she's like, what was that? What, you know, we were way under. And I was like, yeah, but I could tell you could do it. You know,
like, yeah. You need that friend in your life for sure.
Yeah. So I'm
somebody to push you.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was, you know, that was always really cool. And I feel like I'm still that person for a lot of people who run slower than, like, back then it was easy for me to break 4 hours. I could do it every time. Now it's a little less easy, but if someone wants to go for it, like, I'm happy to, you know, do it as, you know, best I can. But, you know, back to the injury. So from running so flat in Chicago, I got this high hamstring strain. I didn't take care of it for like 2 years. Mm. Like when I went to the doctor, he's like, well, how long have you been having this problem? And I was like, well, since like, you know, fall of 2006, and this was in 2008. And he just looked at me like, are you kidding me? And I was like, well, honestly, it wasn't really impeding my performance.
Mm.
But then what would happen is like, I'd go out and start running with my friends and I'd be able to run with them for like 5 miles and then it would seize up and I couldn't keep up.
Mm.
Gotcha. So once I couldn't keep up, then of course I went to the doctor and I'm like, well, can't you just fix this right away?
Right. Just put a band-aid on it. We'll be fine. I need to get out there.
Exactly. Yeah. And of course that's not how it works.
Sure.
So I try to tell people too, like, you know, if you're training for a race and you're injured or sick or whatever, you know, they have that race next year.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, I try to follow that myself. Like skipping to New York was a big deal for me because like that was my thing, right? Like,
yeah, yeah.
But now I look at it and I say like, if I'm hurt, like this is, it's just going to compound the problem. It's so hard to listen to your body, especially if you've been training hard for something or, you know, if you're earlier in your journey, I think.
Yeah, it's really hard to listen to your body, especially like you said early on, because you don't know what's like a normal amount of pain mm-hmm. and what's an injury amount of pain. It's like it's really hard to navigate. When you were going through that injury, like once you for the first time when you had the doctor say like, okay, we need to slow down here for a second. What was like the realization for you in that moment of like, okay, it's going to force me to slow down or I'm going to have to slow down myself. Like what was going through your head when he told you whatever he told you to slow down?
I mean, I already knew by then, like I was so compromised by then that.
Sure.
You know, but it, and you know, it's funny because someone who I had met in 2007, once I like recovered from that injury, he saw mm-hmm. me out running and he's like, I didn't recognize you. He's like, you're everything about your form is totally different.
Oh, really?
I had been so, you know, compensating so much.
Sure.
And even like my carriage was like so tight because I was struggling to keep going. And he's like, wow, you look like a totally different runner.
Yeah.
You know, and of course, once I was able to run pain-free again, and it took a while. Like I definitely relapsed into it because, you know, you feel better. You're like, just go back into your old habits again. Mm-hmm. I'm fine. And then in 2011, I actually wound up, I had a blood clot in my leg.
Mm.
So I went from being able to run like sub 8-minute miles for half marathon to not even being able to run one mile. And I like, had no idea why, but I couldn't breathe. And it's because I had this blood clot in my leg and like small parts of it were going into my lungs and it was crazy. And one thing you said about what's normal pain versus, you know, what's not.
Yeah.
Like, I knew what was going on for me wasn't right. For me. And I knew that was like not how it was supposed to be. But I had such a high pain tolerance built up that like when they finally figured out what was wrong, when I went to one of my doctors, she was like, let me get this straight. Like you had pulmonary embolism, like you had pains in your back moving all around in your lungs and you just walked it off. And I was like, well, I went to three doctors. Nobody could tell me what was wrong with me. They kept saying, oh, you have this, you have exercise induced asthma. I was like, you know, I couldn't run, but I could bike. So I signed up for this 200-mile bike ride.
Mm.
And I did this 200-mile bike ride with, you know, with this blood clot in my leg and everything. And then when I had these problems, like I was like, I don't know. They keep telling me nothing's wrong with me. And, you know, they tell a lot of women that must be in your head.
Right.
So I was like, well, it seems not normal to me, but I don't know what it is. And then when they finally figured out what's going on, you know, they were like, you just walked it off. Basically, you're like, you couldn't sleep. So you just walked around your apartment. I'm like, well, I didn't want to tell my husband to take me to the emergency room because, you know, the poor doctor told me there's nothing wrong with me.
Yeah.
You know? And so I think there is, it is interesting for runners or any endurance athletes, like you put your body through a lot.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, I guess it's fine.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. It's really hard to tell. Yeah. And especially when you're going to the doctor and doing what you're supposed to be doing, and they're also telling you, no, it's this. And it's like, no big deal, whatever. Yeah. What are you supposed to do with that information? You know, we're no doctors. So I can see where you would just continue to push yourself and do what you think is normal. And until a point where I guess your body's like that, this is, we need to find something else out. It's so tricky to navigate for sure.
Yeah. And I think you just have to advocate for yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, same with injuries. Like if you're going to a doctor who's not, or a physical therapist who's not vibing with you, not taking you seriously, or like, you know, something's not right, you just have to like keep trying.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's the thing.
I think that's a really good point. Yeah. Cool. I don't want to jump ship, like completely like change conversations, but I know before we started talking, we talked about Chicago being that experience, one Chicago experience, that was like, the wheels fell off for whatever reason compared to all of your other marathons. So maybe we could talk about that story a little bit, kind of what your experience was with having a marathon where things just did not go your way.
Yeah. So I think I was pretty lucky. Like even in hot weather, like I had done, so the one we were talking about was 2007 Chicago. It was 91 degrees.
Yeah.
And I had done two marathons before that in very hot temperatures. One was in Long Island, which I would not recommend. Sorry, people from Long Island. I don't remember what year it was, 1999 or 2000. But it was also really hot. Like, and it was a small race, and it was on a highway. And my friend and I, like, we were seeing mirages. Like,
Oh,
I think there's an extra water station. It was like really bad. But we still did really fine. And then I did Boston in 2004, and it was 85 degrees at the start, and it used to start at midday.
Yeah.
So I think I ran fine. I only ran 10 minutes lower than my qualifying time. I ran a requalification and whatever. Like I was like, oh yeah, no big deal. Heat doesn't impact me in my head.
Yeah.
And so Chicago 2007, I was already starting to be injured, as I had mentioned, and it was super hot. Like, it was the kind of thing that at mile, like, have you done the Chicago Marathon?
I'm doing it this year. Woo.
So the first part of Chicago Marathon, you're in the city and then you go in Lincoln Park. So Lincoln Park is like mile four.
Mm.
And by mile four, you're in that heat. We were already taking like a water and then pouring the water on ourselves. Like,
yeah.
You think about it at mile four, if you know,
it's early.
Early, so I just kind of ran my normal pace because I was like, well, you know, I've run these hot races before. So I think I ran the first half, you know, about 148, 149, like, you know, I was going for like 340, thinking, okay, you know, be conservative and whatever. And I got to the halfway point, and I was saying to you before, like, I had never even walked water stops or anything, like, that was just not my way. Like, I was always racing.
Yeah.
And I got, my husband's cousins lived right at the halfway mark. I remember they were standing there cheering for me. And I was like, once I saw them, I was like, I'm just going to walk for like a minute. Like, I just need to walk for like a minute. And I walked for like a minute, started running again, and I only made it for like 2 minutes.
Mm.
Okay, I'm just going to walk for a minute. And then luckily I ran into some friends from my training program from when I did the Boston training. And we all just kind of like, helped each other to finish. Like we just basically ran, walked the whole thing. And there was like four of us. And if anyone felt like they wanted to walk, we would all walk.
All walk, yeah.
Yeah. Or like when we saw somebody's family member or something, or somebody wanted, you know, to stop at the water station for longer. And then at mile 20, it was around mile 21. I just basically was like, I just kind of lost my composure.
Sure.
Lost my ever loving shit, basically. I was like, you know, I told them, I'm just leave me here. And they were like, you know, they didn't know what to do. And one of our friends is super, super sweet. She's like, I don't know, what should we do? And my other friend was like, let her go, whatever. And like, just let her, she needs a minute.
Having a moment.
Get her
composure.
Having a moment. Yeah. So I let them go ahead. And then I just like had my little tantrum. And then for like a minute, I just stood there. I just didn't do anything. And then I was like, okay, I'm going to have to keep going. So I started running again, and then I found them within 5 minutes. So I was back to the group, and I was like, so embarrassed. I was like, oh my God, I like literally lost my mind right there.
Sure.
And so we finished together, and we got to one thing. So in Chicago, super flat, and there's an overpass. Mm-hmm. So the first time I ran Chicago, people are yelling, "You can make it up the hill! You can make it up the hill!" I'm like, "This is an overpass. What are these people talking?" Tiny overpass.
Yeah.
This is not, well, when I lived in New York, of course, and I had my New York accent, and I looked at the guy next to me, like, this is an overpass. Now I'm like, this is a mountain. They call it Mount Roosevelt. And it does feel like pretty tough when you're, you know, mile 26.
Sure, yeah.
That year, there were police telling us to stop. They're like, stop running. The race is canceled. Because they had turned off the clocks and everything.
Yeah.
And so we just laughed because we were like, okay, now this is where we're running. Like, we are running. We are getting done with this.
Yes.
So we have pictures of all four of us finishing together and everything. We just could not believe how hot it was. It was just a disaster. And, like, we all felt sick for, like, a week.
I'm sure. Yeah. Just heat exhaustion.
And I said, I'm never running that race again. And I held true until 2019. So I ran the Chicago Marathon in 2001 when I lived in New York, in 2007. And then I was just like, every year I'd like help friends, I would volunteer, I'd do some combination of things. And I was like, I'm never running that race again. That race is horrible. Like, I just had it in my head. And then in 2016, a bunch of friends came with me to run the 20th anniversary of my first San Francisco. We ran San Francisco again. And so one of those friends was like, okay, 2019, you have to sign up for Chicago.
Redemption. And we got to go back.
Well, she was just like, it's my 20th. Anniversary. And I was like, and then I said, oh, well, what if I don't get in? She's like, you have a time qualifier.
She's like, no excuses.
She's like, I know you have a time qualifier. I was like, mm-hmm. And I ran in. It was so fun. That I was like, okay. And so then I've done it every year since, New York and Chicago, both.
So cool.
Which has been really, really fun.
So. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. So, I think I haven't ran nearly as many marathons as you, but it sounds like you maybe it's almost a blessing in disguise to have that one that teaches you something about the race. What do you think, if you could boil it down to like one thing from that Chicago experience that race taught you, what do you think that one thing would be?
Well, I think the lesson I've used from this is like, you have to plan for the conditions. Mm. Right? Like, you can have a great training cycle, but you can show up and it's 90 degrees. Or if you're not good in cold, you could show up and it's really cold, or it could be raining, or it could be whatever, right? Or you could be sick the week before, or whatever it is. And I think you have to adjust your expectations. Because like I was saying to you before, like, that still to this day is my slowest marathon. In the London Marathon this year, I ran 1 minute faster than that. And it was a decent time. Wasn't it? That like,
sure. You know,
it was a time that I'm sure a lot of people would like to do, but at that time I was running so fast that I was like, oh my God, like the sky is falling.
Yeah. The life's over.
And it matters not at all. Right. So I think the most important thing is just to adjust your expectations. In 2022, New York was really hot. I think it was 2022. Yeah. 2022. And my friend and I, who'd done a ton of New York's also, we were on the ferry and we were giving advice to these first time runners. And we were like, look, it's going to be really hot. So if you have a plan and you're realizing that it's a struggle for you, like, adjust your expectations, right? Like, it's not worth making yourself sick. It's not worth risking, you know, your long-term health over this. You know, keep it in mind. And so I started running with my friend. We had a plan. And at mile 8, I told her, you go ahead. I'm going to take the advice that Scott and I were giving today. And I'm going to walk every water stop and make sure I drink a full water and a full Gatorade. Because, like, you know, it's kind of rushing through, like, as one does, right? And I was like, no, I'm going to take my own advice. And when I got to Central Park, I had a couple of friends from college were there. And they were taking pictures, and I stopped to hug them and all that. And they were like so surprised because I never stop. I always just wave, you know, like that's my jam. I wave and they take pictures and I run by. And I stopped, and my friend was like, are you okay? You're stopping. Why are you stopping? And I was like, it doesn't matter to me if I run 3:55 or 4:05 or any time in between. Like, this is just about making it to the end and feeling well enough to like enjoy the post race, right? And that's, I think, the lesson you learn, right? It's like, you have to realize that there are things that are beyond your control. And for me, heat is like my nemesis.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like that's, I mean, some people can run well in heat. I used to be able to, and I can't anymore, and I know it. And so if it's hot and it's a half marathon, 10K, whatever it is, I just say, like, you know, the minute I feel overwhelmed by the heat, I just let it go and I just run for fun. And that New York was great for me because it was like, it was very liberating. And I think the first, yeah. To go kind of back to what you said about having like, having it blow up or having a disaster, I think for me, and I've told a lot of people this, like not running a personal best, like if you do a marathon, like I had, I think I did 6 or 7 or maybe 8 times where I'd always run faster. And then I ran Los Angeles in 1999 and it was maybe like 2 minutes slower, 1 minute slower than my personal best. Like it was close, but it wasn't.
Sure.
It was 5 minutes slower, but you know what? It doesn't matter.
Right? Yeah.
Like, doesn't matter. And it was still like Boston qualifying time. It was still all that stuff, which again, yes. I didn't need, it didn't matter, but I was like, and you're like, you know what happened? Nothing. So I tell friends like, who are like, oh my God, I might not run a PR. And it's like, you know what's going to happen in that case? Nothing.
Yeah.
Right?
It's such a good point.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the thing with the social media stuff too. Like,
I was about to say the same thing. Social media has added this whole other layer to it, but yeah.
Yeah. Like I feel so sad. Like a couple of marathons, I did Mountain Speech a few times, which is in Ojai, California, which I highly recommend.
Oh, cool.
It's really cool. It's a really, really cool race.
Yeah.
And a lot of people get Boston qualifiers there. And I remember the first year I did it, we saw, like, there was a couple people that we had met along the way. And then I saw their Instagram post and it was like, I ran a personal best, but I'm so disappointed. Like, in my opinion, if personal best, even by 1 second, the word disappointed should never come in. But a lot of people are like,
exactly.
Well, my running coach says I have this potential. Like, well, I have lots of potential too, but like, you know, this is the fastest time you ever ran.
Yeah, celebrate, like, that. You have
celebrate.
To.
Celebrate. And I mean, you know what? Like, even if you don't run a good time, but, you know, you did your best and you, like, with the conditions you had, right? Like, that New York was not one of my faster New Yorks, but it was one of my best executed New Yorks.
Sure.
And I was proud, and I'm still proud of it. I'm proud of that because I basically went into it and I was like, okay, you know, adjust. And now just do what it takes to feel good at the end of this.
Totally.
And I was so proud of that. Like, I'm
totally.
Like, you didn't make yourself sick. You didn't make yourself crazy. Like, this is amazing. And when I see like a lot, I feel like just, it's overwhelming when you see these big, the marathon majors, like you see people and they're like, I'm so disappointed because even though I ran my personal best, I should have been able to run. It's like, well, it's a marathon. You never know what's going to happen.
Yeah, there's no should. Yeah. It's all so individual. And I think I love that there, like, yeah. The point that you just made about how you can, that the goals don't always have to be time-based. Like
no.
For my second marathon, my goal was not time-based at all. I ended up like with APR, but the goal was to feel good after the race. And I felt great.
Yeah.
And that was the success. The time was just a happy accident that all also
right.
happened as well. But yeah, your goals don't have to be so centered around time. They can be centered around whatever you want because we make the goals. That's what's beautiful about running. It's all us.
Yeah. And I think, like, definitely it took me a long time to get to that.
Yeah.
But I remember, like, when I had that, when I had the blood clot in 2012, I did a half marathon and it was my first marathon. I had run under one. It's the same thing, like under 3:30. It's like under 1:40 for
yeah.
years and years in a row. And never thought I'd have to run over 1:40. And then I ran under 1:30, under 1:40 in that first half marathon I ran once I let myself rehab from the blood clot. And I seriously was like going crazy at the finish line. And people were like, oh, you run PR? I'm like, no.
Hit my goal though.
And then I said, but this was my goal. And then,
yes.
You know, my friend who I was with ran a big PR and we were like celebrating. And I was like, and I realized, like, the other thing people always say, if you look at my Instagram or my blog, like, I always have amazing pictures of smiling. And that hasn't always been true historically, but I run with a lot more joy now because it's not only about the time, it's about the experience and about like executing your plan, whatever your plan is.
Yeah. Oh,
and
I love
part
that.
Of my plan is to smile a lot and have fun. Like more smiles per mile. Smiles per mile.
That's your measurement for how well the race goes. I love it.
Exactly. How many pictures I have. If there's 60 pictures of me from marathon photo, I want to be smiling at least 90% of them. That's
cool. Oh, I love that. Yeah. No, that's great. Having those, however you measure your marathon, it's totally up to you. I think that's
exactly.
Super important. Well, cool. Well, thank you for breaking down those couple of race experiences. I think there was a lot of tips and tricks, advice, and just hearing your story was awesome there. I guess if you could like sum up advice, there's a lot of newer runners that listen to this show and a lot of first time marathoners that are thinking about running their first marathon. So if you had any advice for like that group of people, what advice would you offer them?
I would definitely say, find what works for you. And of course, if it's your first marathon, it's going to take you time. But, you know, join a group if you can. It's great. Like I train with the Chicago Area Runners Association, and we have people with like a lot of people, first marathoners join the training programs and just like, you know, get advice from other people and try different things along the way and, you know, see what works for you, but just make sure, you know, you respect the distance and that kind of thing. And then I would say like, make sure it's fun. It shouldn't be like a job. I know a lot of people are like, I have friends who feel like they have to do the marathon if they've done it once, or if they do it every year. Like if you're not feeling it, don't do it.
Yeah.
Defer it to next year or just don't do it. Like if like, this is supposed to be fun. And someone told me this once, I was really upset about a time in a race that I ran. I was running with a team and I felt like I should have done better. And she said to me, she said, did somebody pay you to come here today? And I was like, what? She's like, you paid for this. Right. Like this is, you know, my husband has said the same thing when I was injured and I was still trying to keep running. I'd come home and I'd cry about my performance. And he'd be like, you know, if you're going to cry about it, could you stop paying our money for this?
Right. Right.
Like yeah, this is a lot of money to spend on something that is
to be upset. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think, remember the why of it and like do what makes it fun for you. I think for me, I love the training because I love meeting new people. I love talking to new runners and like sharing my perspectives, you know, and trying to not to be like somebody's mom and tell them how to do it, but also just like, again, like what works for me and to hear about what works for them or, you know, what questions they have about different courses and that kind of thing. And I guess the ultimate advice, which I never follow, but I always give, which is like, make sure you start slow and finish strong. Because as you know, when you're in the race, it feels so easy and too slow, you know? So, you know, join a pace group or something like that and just try to like be disciplined and stay with the pace group for the first half at least.
Yes.
You know, and like,
yes,
even if it feels so slow and you don't know why it feels, you know. You know,
I'm a big advocate of like a slow audiobook or something in the beginning, like something where you could slow your brain down because the adrenaline hits you so quickly at that start line that it's so hard to like reel yourself back. And you wanted to, especially if you're in like the back of a corral that's a little bit faster than you, and that can be even worse because you've got everybody that just takes off in front of you. But I think any way that you can center yourself and just calm down and like stay present is going to help for sure.
Yeah. And I guess the last piece too with that.
Yeah.
I've known a lot of people who try to get ahead in corrals, you know, to go into a faster corral.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do it. First of all, you're going to be slowing the people behind you down if you're running appropriately, and likely you're going to go too fast in the beginning and like, you know, really struggle at the end. And yeah, I mean, I've run plenty of marathons where the last 6 miles is the struggle bus, but the time looks good at the end. But that's not the experience you want to have.
Right.
You know, like it's brutal.
Yeah. You want to finish feeling good more than anything for sure.
Exactly.
Cool. Well, I love it. I love the advice. And the last couple of questions I ask are just kind of fun questions at the end. And then I've got a question from the audience as well. We do one question from the audience.
Okay.
So I'll ask you one from social media as well. But the first one is about fuel. And my disclaimer is always fuel is your own journey. Shoes are your own journey. We talked a lot about that today. So make sure you're getting your own shoes measured or feet measured. Make sure that you're making your own decisions about fuel. But for you, what have you liked for fuel over time?
Um, I I have actually been using goo for a long time. Like, yeah. I used to use plain goo, which they don't even have anymore, just plain. Mm-hmm. And now I use the liquid goo.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, I use that one too.
Yeah, with the I use the coffee one, like one caffeinated and one not caffeinated, or one to two not caffeinated. I use salt stick fast chews. I swear by those. And actually, as I've gotten older, the sodium and electrolytes even more important. Mm-hmm. But the fast chews, it also like retrains your brain a little bit when you're feeling tired. If you just suck on the fast chews, it's been really super helpful for me. And then I mostly do water. I used to never do Gatorade or anything, but I do Gatorade if they have it.
Cool. Yeah. So I like the liquid goose too. A better texture for sure than some of the other ones that we've
drink
tried.
It down,
just
yep.
like juice. Yeah. Love it. And then for shoes, what have you liked for shoes over time?
I was a Mizuno. Well, I was Saucony, Gridazores, which I loved, and then they discontinued them. And then I was with Mizuno, did Mizuno Wave Riders for a long time. With the super shoes, I wore the Hoka Carbons. I'm not a Nike person, Vaporflies. I tried them one time, I got a free pair, and they totally, it hurts my hip. And then I fell and I hurt my hand, so I couldn't get the Hoka Carbons on. So I started wearing the Saucony Endorphin Pros. And so I went with Saucony Endorphin Pros. That's what I've been wearing. And I've been trying out the New Balance Fuel Cells.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I like those too. All right, sweet. And then last question. This question comes from TikTok. Thank you from Divot David for the question. But he asks, he's training for his first marathon, and he's wondering, how does one go about not overtraining?
I mean, that's hard too because it's personal. But I think you have to be honest with yourself. I think you know you're overtraining if you're just too tired, if your runs feel like work. I think the other thing is to try to follow a pretty beginner to intermediate plan. I've known a lot of people to like who are talented runners. Maybe they've done half marathons really well and stuff like that, and then they jump right into an advanced plan with high mileage. I would recommend doing a beginner or intermediate plan. You know, maybe if you're fast, like do some additional speed work, but don't do the most advanced plans that are more like what pro runners do. Just kind of stick to something basic for your first marathon and then see how your body recovers from that.
Yeah. Especially if you're planning on running more than one marathon, you know, like it's, you can kind of look at it as like your trial and error marathon where you're just doing what you can with the information you have. But
I moved to Chicago and I was training for Boston, I had a lot of people that I trained with whose personal bests were much slower than mine. But in the training, they were out there like training with like way ahead of their skis. You know, they were like really pushing themselves, really doing tons of miles and like doing really hard speed work. And I felt like after the race, the performances, some of the people, like they left it on the trail, right? Like they didn't, they overdid it.
Yeah.
And so their body, by the time it came to race day, they were just exhausted. I guess that's the other thing, make sure you do a taper. And
yeah,
like,
huge.
You might feel like junk during the taper as you do, but you know, it'll pay off in the end.
Yeah, you'll be fresh for race day for sure.
Exactly.
Cool. Well, I love it. Good advice. And thank you again for walking through your journey. I know, like we said, there was no way we could get through 66 marathons, but hopefully we hit some of the high points for you. And I really appreciate you coming on this weekend.
Yeah, thanks. I'm sorry it was a little bit meandering at some points. I'm like, what were we talking about again? There's no. A lot to it.
yes, there was a lot that we needed to cover, but I think we got some good stuff in there. So
And I can't wait to meet you when you come to Chicago in real life.
I know. I'll take all the Chicago trips. I don't even know if I've announced officially. This is the first podcast episode I've filmed. No, you're totally fine. That I've filmed on the show. So if you don't know, I'm running the Chicago Marathon 2025, and I'll take all the tips and tricks from literally everybody. So really, really looking forward to it. Hopefully, I'll get to see you in person.
Yeah, we'll be in touch before then with all the tips and then
yes,
and any kind of advice you need, logistics and that kind of stuff as well.
Cool, love it.
Awesome.
All right,
well, thank
sweet.
You so much. This is so fun.
Thank you again. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for tuning into another episode. If you're enjoying My First Marathon, it would mean the world to me if you could rate and review the show. And if you or someone you know has ran a marathon and would like to share your story, I have a guest form to fill out in my bio on Instagram. That username is @MyFirstMarathonPod. See you on the next one.